We don't appreciate the light unless we experience the dark.
I think that men have to be very strategic and present and intentional with the way that they express their emotions.
There's a glass, and in the glass, right, something's happened. Just put it in, carry on, go, go, go. Put it in, go, go, go. Put it in, and before you know it, it's like, it's the smallest thing, like someone didn't open the door, for example, and that's it, you've exploded.
The power of mutual self-disclosure is really important. In my coaching, I make it a point to share my own insights and my own personal stories, because, you know, I do believe that it allows you to connect on a deeper level. And then it also shows that we're all human.
So hi, everyone. Welcome back to Therapize. So with us today, we have Austin. So Austin, I'm going to actually start this really different. If someone could describe you in three words, what are the first three words that come up?
I think that the first three words would be warm, compassionate, and loving. I think that those are the most important things to have it, to embody. And those three things have changed for me throughout time. And so now that I'm getting into my older adult years, I think that those are the three things that really help you build character. And I think that those are what's necessary and what's kind of lacking in our society nowadays.
Yeah. What do you mean by warm?
Warmth is this general like positivity that you kind of radiate, right? So, you know, one of the things I like to help people understand is that we live in a society of where, you know, people are like, oh, that person doesn't want to talk to me, so I don't want to talk to them. And so we all end up being strangers and just kind of going through our lives without ever making new connections or meeting anybody. But in reality, if we just were willing to be positive and to go first, then we could make connections and we could develop deep, meaningful friendships with people who were once strangers. And so being warm is just about having this positive magnetic energy that radiates and that basically leaves a good impression on others.
Yeah, no, I really hear that. And even when you talk about like meaningful connections, I think as we progress through life, we really understand what meaningful connections mean to us. And it's something that keeps evolving and changing for us. So what does a meaningful connection mean to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a great quote. It's like the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your relationships.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's the ability to be able to formulate a connection with somebody that's deeper than that surface level, that you're able to kind of not only express your authentic self and your vulnerable self, but not be judged for being that person that you're saying that you are. And so, you know, ironically, the more authentic you are and the more in alignment you are with yourself, the more you're going to connect with other people and or not connect with them. And that's okay, because that's kind of how it's supposed to be. If you were able to develop deep, meaningful connections with everybody, then it would be very overwhelming. So that's what makes it so profound and impactful when you do find those people that you genuinely connect with, because it's like that soul on fire feeling. You're like, oh my gosh, I feel like I've known you my whole life. That's what I try to find in other people, is really that develop that meaningful connection where it's like, hey, I feel like I could tell you anything and you're not going to judge me for it. It's like that true, not only self-acceptance, but acceptance from them.
And there's something there which is really beautiful about the appreciation of meaningful relationships. And we don't appreciate them unless we don't have the other side. It's like we don't appreciate the light unless we experience the dark. So there's something really beautiful about the appreciation. And when you get it and when you feel it, you're like, yep, this is really means something really important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the power of the duality of life, right? And I just started reading the Tao. Wayne Dyer does a great interpretation of it. Change your mind, change your thoughts. And it's really incredible to hear him talk about the duality and then how you kind of go from duality to everything is one. Yeah. And so once you kind of understand those concepts and you really understand that we are all interconnected, that, you know, there's a powerful ripple effect or butterfly effect that we can have on the world, it really changes the way that you view everybody else, but also the way that you speak to other people, because you understand how much of an impact that can have.
That's beautiful. That really, really is. The more awareness, the more understanding that we gain. And these sort of, when we're thinking of like Wayne Dyer, have you always been interested in books like this, or trying to understand more about like the psychology, the self-development side? Or is this something that has come up with experiences that have shaped you or your own sort of like understanding of life?
Yeah, so I kind of have been a closet nerd my whole life. You know, as a kid growing up,
nerd? What is a closet nerd?
I got picked on a lot. You know, I was a little skinny, kind of scrawny kid. And so I was bullied a lot. And so, you know, I tried to do anything I could to fly under the radar. Mm. That's what led to, you know, some of the insecurities and some of the weaknesses. And that's kind of why I decided to build myself as a man, was, you know, so I could protect myself. But yeah, that's, I think, what makes me so good at what I do, because I've been on the other side of it. And so, you know, when people see me now, they have no idea that I used to be that's kind of weak, scrawny, shy kid. But, you know, the reality is everything in life is a skill and everything can be built. And so for me, I've kind of built those skills over time. But what's been great is the older I've gotten, the more I've been able to revert back to those things that really were interesting and I was passionate about as a child. So yeah, I used to love to read. I used to love to teach and learn. And so for me now, I really love psychology. I really love philosophy, which is why I'm getting my PhD in psychology, so that I can help people at that more deeper foundational level. Yeah. But I would say that the real turning point, you know, and it's going to sound cliche, but was a breakup. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of went through a breakup with my college sweetheart in right around COVID time. And so, you know, not only did I have the breakup, but I also had the time. And I think that that's a powerful thing for everybody to understand, is that, you know, stillness is so powerful. And so yeah, when you have that time for true reflection, that's when you can really be like, oh, okay, hey, like, my life isn't quite going the way that I want it to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I started to realize that my ex was a great woman, and I was like, this is what I say that I want, but I wasn't able to make it work, I had to go inside and I had to look at myself and be like, okay, where was I to blame in this situation? Like, what did I do wrong? And once I took radical accountability and ownership over my part in that, I was able to then look at myself, you know, almost from a bird's eye view, and be like, hey, I need to work on these things if I do truly want to develop a meaningful, loving connection with another partner. And so it was really great to kind of go through that transformation and, you know, for my breakup with her to be the catalyst to my growth.
Mm. So Austin, what happened during COVID? Do you think it was COVID itself, or do you think something that COVID, like what the secondary sort of symptoms of COVID, was that the thing that sort of brought up? I'm just trying to understand what happened and what made you start wanting to look at the relationship side and yourself.
I think that, you know, for the first time in my life, I wasn't just like, go, go, go. I wasn't running from one thing to the next. You know, I finally had the time to just like breathe and to like look up, you know. And it's kind of like a Maslow's hierarchy of needs thing, right? Where it's like, if you're just struggling at the survival phase and you're trying to make ends meet, then you're going to have a difficult time actually achieving true self-actualization. Yeah. And so for me in that time, I was very much asleep. You know, I wasn't aware of my weaknesses and my limitations as a man. And so, you know, that's one of the things that I really love to help people understand now, is that, you know, the first step really is self-awareness. It's becoming aware of those limitations, of our weaknesses, of accepting those imperfections, because, you know, nobody's going to be perfect. And so for me, that was a big part of my journey and transformation, was I wanted everybody to think that I was perfect. And so I had to put this perfect facade and perfect image up, and nobody can uphold that or maintain that for, you know, forever, but especially just in general. And so eventually, you know, even a leaky faucet can drown somebody. And so I wasn't expressing the things that I needed in relationship. I wasn't articulating all of the things that were bothering me that needed to change in our relationship.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think that was, that you weren't articulating, you weren't expressing? What do you think that was about?
That's a great question. That definitely stems from my childhood, you know, and you learn these things over time. My parents were a very dysfunctional relationship, you know, on and off. They met in a car accident, actually.
Okay.
And are you still there?
Yeah.
My computer went away. They met in a car crash, and, you know, I joke that it's been a car crash ever since. And
Oh, wow. That's a great analogy of how you just explained that.
They're still together and they love each other more than anything. And I think that it just goes to show you the power of love. And so inevitably, for me, watching them fight so much and have so much conflict growing up, my idea of a healthy relationship was one that was, like conflict averse, that was free of conflict. Mm-hmm. And so my goal as a man in a relationship later on was like, hey, I'm going to avoid fights. I'm going to do whatever I have to. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm going to brush it under the rug. But, you know, again, if you just keep piling up trash, eventually it's going to explode. And so that's kind of what would happen is I would, just continually allow things to happen that weren't necessarily what I wanted in the relationship. And then eventually my emotions would explode. And so that's when I started to realize, okay, hey, you know, I need to work on myself. I need to be able to emotionally regulate. I can't just like be good and then all of a sudden explode. And it's not fair to the people that I love, and it's not fair to myself. Yeah. And so that really helped me understand, you know, how to recognize my own emotions, bring awareness to them, acknowledge that they existed, and then try to interpret why they were happening, and then nurture myself so that I could work through that problem.
Yeah. And even when you're saying that, when what comes up for me is when you're talking about nurturing yourself, it's almost like nurturing that little boy within you, the little boy who perhaps would see mom and dad and see sort of like things that would go on and be like, right, I don't want to be in situations like this. So we think of like the avoidance of not putting yourself in certain situations. And how powerful is it that as humans, we do this to try and survive, to keep ourselves safe. So we enter these same patterns, but ultimately all we're trying to do is keep ourselves safe, but it stops us from showing up authentically by us taking out these or presenting with these basic survival needs. It means then that we aren't able to show our true selves. And I wonder what that process was like for you.
I love that you touch on that, because this is something that I've, you know, continually work on. And I think that, you know, it shows you that, you know, when you're young, what you do is you develop these survival mechanisms. Yeah. And I like to think of it like you put a jacket on yourself. And so, you know, my whole life I was putting all these layers and layers and layers on, and I was building up walls and walls and walls. And eventually what it led to was, again, me not expressing myself authentically, me not showing up who I was supposed to be. And what you realize is that, you know, while those jackets or while those layers helped me get through my childhood, what I needed to do as an adult to get to the next level then was to unshed those layers, was to start peeling back those layers and to be able to get back to expressing myself freely and honestly, you know. So I think that that's been the biggest like revelation for me as in my, you know, early 30s now, is understanding that vulnerability is a superpower, and that in the right person's and you know, presence, it can really help you grow and also foster a deep, meaningful connection that you would never be able to with anybody else.
Yeah, that I think it's really powerful. And when you were talking just there about vulnerability, it reminded me of a conversation I was having earlier this week. And it was with someone who was saying and letting me know that men shouldn't show emotion because it's not manly. It's not it's not a way that's an attractive trait in society. And we were having this conversation, and there was another third person there as well. And during the conversation, what came out was, actually, we all have our own views of what we think is attractive, what we think that we should be like in society. But I wonder what your view is of that, of men showing emotions, men being vulnerable, because, it would be great to hear your view.
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I think that it's very contingent. I think that men have to be very strategic and present and intentional with the way that they express their emotions. Yeah. I heard another psychologist put it really well. You know, if you were out hunting back, you know, in the hunter-gatherer days, and you're with a bunch of other men and you're sitting there trying to talk about your feelings and talk about how you're scared to go, you know, hunt this deer, then you're going to kind of get outcasted and shunned by the other men, because they're gonna be like, hey, like, he can't cut it. Nowadays, we don't necessarily have to go hunt and kill for our food. So it's a slightly different, you know, the problems that we do deal with are more emotional regulation, are more mental regulation. And so it is very powerful to be able to articulate your emotions and to be able to voice those. But you have to understand the context, and you have to be strategic about who you share those with. I think, you know, if you're just going around sharing your emotions with every stranger, then it's going to become problematic. But if it's somebody who actually genuinely loves and cares about you, then you need to be willing to be vulnerable, to be able to express those emotions, not to necessarily lay them on them, but to tell them what's going on in your inner world, because nobody can read your mind. And so if you allow them some insight into your inner world as to why you're acting the way that you are, then they can potentially help you, or at least give you some grace so that you can work through those things on your own. And I think it's super powerful when you can just let that emotion out. That's a big part of getting to that healing place, is just being able to express it and understand why it's happening, acknowledge that it's there, and then take action to move through it.
Definitely. And I think there's also like this this idea of vulnerability, meaning that you go out and you talk to everyone and you share all your emotions. And that's not what vulnerability is. Vulnerability is you being able to understand what's going on. Even if you don't understand what's going on, being able to express it to people that you do feel safe with, people that you do feel like you would like to discuss these things with, not feeling that you need to go and talk to everyone. Because there's this idea that I don't want to be vulnerable in front of people. And it's like, yeah, but you get to choose who you want to be vulnerable with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and again, it is one of those things that's that meaningful connection, right? When you're able to self-disclose those types of vulnerabilities, it allows you to develop this bond that's so much deeper than you would with somebody if you're not able to share those deep, intimate parts of yourself. And ironically, you know, those things that you've dealt with that you have overcome end up becoming your superpower. It ends up becoming something that you can help others deal with and overcome because you've lived it and you've experienced it. So I think that that is one of the crucial pieces of emotional intelligence there. Yeah. It's, you know, people don't realize that all of these things are skills, are muscles that we can work on and develop. And so the better you get at articulating your emotions, at working through them, the stronger you actually become, right? Like it's like working out in the gym. You know, the more weight you put under your muscles, the stronger they're going to get. The more you're able to bear those emotional loads, the faster you move through them, and the quicker and the less it bothers you, really.
Yeah. And do you feel like your story and the things that you've been through, do you feel like that now helps you to help other people go through certain sort of chapters in their life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, the power of mutual self-disclosure is really important. You know, in my coaching, I make it a point to share my own insights and my own personal stories, because, you know, I do believe that it allows you to connect on a deeper level. And then it also shows that we're all human, that we all go through things. You know, there's no reason to act like you're perfect or you're above anybody else. You know, the fact that you have dealt with something and you've worked through it is able to motivate and empower other people to realize, like, oh my gosh, they did it, so can I. And so I think that it's super important to be able to recognize that, and especially as a mental health coach and therapist, to be able to articulate that to your clients, that they aren't the only ones that have struggled with these types of things. Yeah. And that it's possible to heal from them, and you will come out better and stronger on the other side.
Yeah. And I think it's hope. You give them hope, because they often you meet with people and they'll say, like, yeah, but look, you've got this and you're doing this and you're doing, and they're like, yeah, but this is what I've been through. This is what's gone on in my life. And this is what I've accomplished because of this and this and this. And actually, by getting this support. So it's almost like you become that light. And there is that quote of sometimes when you start shining the light from within you, you allow or you offer permission for others to then start shining their light. And there's something really powerful is when you are doing your own inner work, you can then help and support others because you're understanding what their journey's like. And it's not saying that, oh, they're going to go through the exact same thing that you've been through, because their journey will be different, but you're offering that insight and that encouragement, that hope. And it's just that light. That's all how I can best describe that. But do you see that with your clients, is when you're working with people, you notice just where they're at, you know their path, and they may not be able to see the path, but you know the path that they're going to go down, and you'll be like, yep, don't worry, this is what's going to happen, and just trust the process. And they look at you like, what do you mean, just trust the process? I'm here and I'm not able to regulate my emotions, and you're just telling me to trust the process. But yeah, do you see that with the people that you work with?
Yeah, absolutely. And you articulated that so beautifully. I think that that's such a powerful way to describe that. You know, once you kind of start doing the work, you realize how contagious everything is. And that's why, you know, there's so many quotes on, like, the people that you surround yourself with and your environment. It has such an impact because of the fact that, you know, happiness is contagious. And so if you spend your time with happy people throughout the day, you're going to become happier. Mm-hmm. If you spend your time with people who are optimistic and people who are positive and people who see the good in the world, then you're going to start to see those things as well. And so same thing with shining the light on kind of the pathway forward. You know, bad things happen to us all the time. Like, that's part of the human experience. I'm not going to tell people that bad things aren't going to continue to happen to them, even if they do the work. But what I will say is that you'll have the tools to be able to work through those a lot faster. So now, you know, if you get broken up with, you know, it's still going to hurt and it's still going to sting, but you're going to realize, hey, this was a learning lesson for me to be like, okay, hey, this person wasn't the right person for me. Now I can kind of move on and find somebody who may be a better fit down the road. And so it doesn't take away the sting, but it allows you to be able to have the tools and the resources to get to the next phase of the healing process at a much faster rate. And also to be able to enjoy or have some positivity, like, you know, learn the lesson or the blessing that comes out of that.
Because even when we think of like the sting is almost like it's a trigger. It's a point where it's almost like a mirror being held up in front of us. And it's for us to really look into that mirror and to understand what is it that's going on. And that's the thing, or sometimes that's the tools that we don't have, because what ends up happening is we repeat these same patterns. We end up in the same relationship. We end up in the same. And it's like, why does this keep happening? And there has to be some point where you start to realize, okay, I'm ready to go in now. I'm sick and tired of these patterns playing out in this way. Or it may not even be that you're aware of these patterns. You just know that I don't feel happy where I'm at. I don't feel like I get this peace. I feel anxious. I feel stressed. I feel worried. I have this doubt. So these are like the tip of the iceberg. And underneath that, there's so many layers of the real essence of what's really going on. But we don't see that until we have the space to be able to start diving deeper within ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you articulated that very well. I think, you know, the true path to growth is recognition, right? So it's such a simple process and it's so subtle that sometimes people don't even realize it's happening until, you know, years after it's happened. But realistically, you need to recognize those patterns. Okay, hey, I keep dating this same type of person. Hey, I keep getting anxious in this same type of situation. Once you recognize that pattern, then choosing a different response is exactly how you, that the path that leads to growth. So it's like, okay, hey, the next time I'm not going to date this person when I start to see this red flag, or, hey, I'm going to bring this up right away so that I don't have to worry about this becoming an issue down the road. And so once you start to choose that new response, that's the method to growth. Yeah. And it's so cool when you can start to see people recognize their own patterns and then take accountability for that and then choose an alternative option moving forward. I think that that's what really lights me up is that growth that I see out of my clients.
Yeah, no, definitely. And also just for us as well, like we're sitting here, we're saying, yep, do the, you know what, but it still comes up for us. Like even now, like there'll be triggers and there'll be things that come up and you're like, right, what is this? But the thing is, we understand what the tools are. We know, and we're like, right, okay, I need to do this, or this is how I can help myself, or this is what I now can do to try and unravel what's going on here. So I think it's about having that awareness. Then you know what the, like, or having the space to understand, and then you can consciously try and change. But I think when you don't have the tools, often what ends up happening is you just feel so overwhelmed and you just keep trying to hide it and hide it and hide it, because you may be ashamed. You may feel guilt. You may feel embarrassed. So it's easier to try and avoid it, ignore it, pretend it's not there, but then it keeps coming back. And there's only so much that you can keep doing to try and run away from it, because no matter where you go, you take yourself. And that's the thing, wherever you go, you take yourself, and you're going to keep bumping back into yourself. So it is important just to look at yourself. So when people say, or they talk about emotional regulation, you mentioned that earlier today as well. What do you mean by emotional regulation?
Emotional regulation is powerful. And, you know, I really love that you touched on that, because, the prior statement, because, you know, it's very easy for us to think that we're self-aware and to think that we have it all under control. But that's the reason why therapists exist and why coaches exist, because it is very difficult for us to recognize that within ourselves. And, you know, even something like, you know, I was a personal trainer for a long time, helping people in the gym. It helped for me to have a trainer to kind of show me things that I was doing wrong. So like, even therapists need therapists, and even coaches need coaches, because of the fact that it's very difficult sometimes to recognize those patterns in ourselves, even though we're so good at recognizing it and being able to give advice to other people. But when it comes to emotional regulation, you know, self-regulation is a powerful tool. And I think that one of the things that helps me a ton with that is exactly what you said, is really taking a pause. It's taking a pause to allow yourself to sit there and kind of reflect and have that stillness. And then breath work is really powerful for me too. And so I've been doing a lot of, it's called NSDR, non-sleep deep rest. And so you really do a powerful, deep, intentional breath work, to where you're breathing in, doing box breaths, and then kind of slow out through the mouth, and once you give yourself that time to reset your central nervous system, mm-hmm. it allows you to calm down, kind of get rid of those anxious feelings. And then, you know, the other thing that I really like to do when I'm feeling anxious or have any sort of issue is to like write the problem out, is, you know, what's going on? Why do I feel this way? And then what would I do if this were to happen? And once I have like a solution to my, you know, supposed problem, it allows me to stop kind of suffering those imagined troubles and allows me to get back to the present moment and live my life again.
See, even just like when you talk about breathing and you talk about journaling, it's the pause. It's the power of the pause. So when you're stopping and you're just writing down what's going on instead of the go, go, go mentality, because you mentioned earlier that that's what you were living by, was go, 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 next thing, next thing, next thing. You don't really get to sit and understand, hang on, what is this that's just come up, rather than just running off doing the next thing. It's like, no, let me come back here. Let me sit with this stillness. And you're not running away from yourself. You're trying to understand it. Even if you may not fully understand what's going on, you just know that there's certain feelings coming up. You're able to sit in them because you've got them tools. What made you get into, or how did you get into breath work?
Honestly, I most of the breath work that I have recently got into was from Dr. Andrew Huberman, following him for a long time and just listening to his advice and really taking it to heart, and then actually implementing and using the practices. And then, you know, once you start to use them, you realize how powerful they are and how helpful they are in any instance. And, you know, before I was kind of telling you, I would, with my ex-partner, I would really like take everything in and then I would explode. And so, you know, having, you know, stockpiling all of those problems and issues, and all of a sudden it just triggers me and it comes out explosion. Now what I do is I take that pause and I take that breath, and it allows me to maintain that emotional regulation, just simply taking that pause moment and not reacting, but choosing to respond in a more loving, kind, gentle way. And that has been just night and day for me, not only in my, you know, personal life, but also in my relationships and my relationships with others.
Yeah. And even when you're talking there, it's like, okay, there's a glass, and in the glass, right, something's happened. Just put it in, carry on, go, 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 put it in, go, 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 put it in. And before you know it, it's like, it's the smallest thing. Like someone didn't open the door, for example. And that's it. You've exploded. And people look at you like, what's going on? And you're just like, yeah, but they didn't know. But that's because your glass is really full. So naturally, people can't see that this is what's going on for you, but you don't even know what's going on. So you just know that you're annoyed now and you don't want to be around anyone. But when you understand, okay, there's this one thing that's happened, let me pause, let me just try and understand it. And you may not even have the space to understand, but you've acknowledged that this is what's going on. That then means that it doesn't build up. And you're more likely to be able to have that space because you get it, you understand it, to just sit and understand, like, okay, let me reflect on that actually, or let me speak to one of my friends about it, or let me take it to my therapist or my coach and try and understand and unravel a little bit more of why this has happened the way that it has. But if we don't do that, it's those little sort of explosions keep happening, but then little explosions become bigger explosions, which is like what you said you've experienced. And now, do you find yourself that cup keep filling up, or do you feel like it doesn't fill up the way that it wants? It's never filled up the same way.
That's a great question. I think for me now, I don't feel that same level of taking things on anymore. Yeah. You know, I finally have understood, you know, not only do I not necessarily have to carry my problems with me, but I don't have to take on the problems of other people. Just because, you know, I'm a coach, I'm a therapist, doesn't mean that I have to take on those problems for those people. It's still their fight to bear. It's just my job is to help them see a potential solution and get across that bridge faster. And so it's kind of the same thing with, you know, those small little things that add up over time for us. That same is true for other people. And so, you know, if you look at something like fundamental attribution error, we think that when people are upset with us, it's something that we did. And in reality, more often than not, it's those little things that happened to them throughout the day that's causing them to now unleash on us, or to project onto us that they had a bad day, or that they got yelled at work, or that, you know, they're stressed about something else, you know, somebody's family problems or whatever. And so once you can recognize that other people are also going through these things, it really lessens the load on you to make you realize that it's not your fault in the situation, that they're probably just going through something themselves.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you also spoke about perfectionists, people pleasers. And when we hear perfectionists, people pleasers, we are living outside in, aren't we? We're living outside in where we're so focused on people. We've become so used to noticing the subtle things in people. So the thing with that is, yeah, people might be having a bad day or people's cup is really, really full, but we don't know that. We just know that they're not okay or they're acting a little bit different. I must have done something. And there's a lot of people that will carry that energy around believing that they've done something wrong and try to fix it and try to make it better. And I wonder, did you ever notice yourself going through something like that in the past when you were very much go, go, go?
Yeah. So, you know, I do positive intelligence coaching now. And yeah. So it's similar to like a bridge between positive psychology and emotional intelligence. And, you know, there's a saboteur that we have that's called the hypervigilant. And so it means that you're like almost over aware of your surroundings and of other people. And so, you know, ultimately, when you grow up in a traumatic environment, typically what happens is you will be vigilant about other people's emotions and take those on as if they are your own. And so again, that's kind of one of those layers that you need to unpeel and to recognize that, hey, their emotions are not my responsibility. My responsibility is to manage my own emotions. I can help them work through theirs, but there's no reason for me to take that on from that perspective. Yeah. And so I have noticed that I used to be very much the guy that would try to, you know, have this savior complex and try to take on everybody's problems and help them with work through their things. And now what I realize is that people can only help them. I can only help people if they want to help themselves. Yeah. And so yeah. I can give them the best advice in the world, but they need to be the ones that actually take action towards working through those things.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful life lesson and one that doesn't just work in professional life, also in personal life as well.
It's so true, and when
And when we talk about just like the sensitivity side and that shift that happens with our mind where we are, once upon a time, we would personalize things and we want to fix it. Because I grew up being one of the archetype of like the good girl. So following all the rules, making sure that I was empathetic, I was caring, I was doing all these things basically that I felt I needed to. But doing that meant that I was living in outside in. I was so focused on everyone else around, making sure that everyone was all happy with everyone was all okay. And as soon as someone wasn't, I would be able to tell. And I was like, right, I've done something. I need to fix it. And it's only until I started shifting that way and started to really understand more and more about sensitivity, about how I show up, my patterns, I started realizing what was going on. And I was like, I didn't realize this is, you could be another way. I didn't realize that you could understand like, this is what's my stuff. This is what belongs to them. And when you did, or when I did rather, it was just like life changing for me. So when I see clients now going through the same thing, or when they are so sort of confined by these rules of life that they've created, I'm like, these are rules that we've created, that you've created these rules, just like I once created the rules and I was living by life has to be this way and I need to do this for this person. And sometimes people would say, well, you don't have to do that. I'm like, yeah, but I do. And if I ever said no to someone, I was so afraid of them getting upset with me, of them rejecting me, or them saying that I don't want to be your friend anymore. So I would do certain things because I'd be like, but I don't want to be left out, or I don't want people to think badly of me. And that fear of judgment and how strong it can be in people's lives. Do you see that, or have like your experiences of life? Do you ever recall going through that where you were so afraid of people and like what people would think of you?
Yeah, I think the older I've gotten, the more I've realized that was something that I struggled with a lot. You know, my number one fear for a long time was public speaking. And it was because of the fact that I felt like everybody was judging me. And, you know, in a sense, they kind of were judging me, right? Like I'm up giving a presentation and, you know, I probably was ill prepared. And therefore, you know, they're going to judge me for not knowing what I'm talking about. And so, you know, one of the best cures for that is to be prepared. So, you know, preparation is really powerful when it comes to curing those anxieties. But, you know, same thing with having social anxiety or being introverted. It's like, you know, the less you focus on yourself and the more you focus on like just being present in the moment and being able to have a conversation with one other person, the easier it is for you to operate in that environment. And so now when I give public speeches, instead of worrying that everybody's judging me, I'll speak to one person. And it completely changed my paradigm as far as my fears and my anxieties that came from being judged and perceived by others. And this is something that I'm still working through. You know, one of my largest fears, especially as a man, is not necessarily being incompetent, but the fear of looking incompetent. So, you know, it's not necessarily like...
What does that look like? If someone saw you as being incompetent, what would that look like from your view?
So, you know, one of the things I still struggle with right now is social media and creating content. And so it's, you know, speaking to the camera and feeling as if it's not a comfortable, like... environment for me. You know, I haven't gotten enough repetitions. I haven't done it enough to feel comfortable and to feel competent. And so putting out content that I'm not like proud of, or that like I feel like I was awkward or like said something that wasn't perfect, then it makes me feel uncomfortable as a person, because like I know I could do better than that. But in reality, you know, once you adopt a growth mindset, you realize like, hey, I can get better at this. It's just something that I need more repetitions at. I need to achieve a higher level of mastery or efficacy within this. And so, you know, it's any situation where, you know, you feel like you should have a competency there as a man, but you may not have had enough experience to where now you fear that other people are going to judge you as being lesser than because of the fact that you're not capable of doing as good of a job as you think you should be able to.
Introducing our exclusive newsletter, your weekly dose of inspiration, insights, and empowerment. Each week we deliver curated content straight to your inbox. And this is designed to help you navigate life's challenges and thrive. Join our community of like-minded individuals who are committed to personal growth and self-discovery. Subscribe now to start your journey towards a happier, more fulfilling life. Don't miss out. Yeah. And that's really powerful. Like, and I really appreciate you sharing that, because like when I was on your profile, it never crossed my mind that you may have found it difficult. And I suppose that's social media, isn't it? You end up looking at people's profiles and you're looking, but you only see like that 5% or however much, whatever percentage it is, but you only see such a small percentage, and you create whatever image that you want from looking at someone's profile. So it's interesting that that's what your insecurity is when you're thinking about it. And yet you're still doing it. It doesn't stop you. So how do you manage that? How do you stop your thoughts from still moving forward, still doing the things that you want to do? How do you still allow that to happen?
I think it comes to what we just talked about, is kind of that preparation. And so, you know, for me, a lot of me jumping into this role as kind of a coach and trying to better and empower men wasn't necessarily something I was always felt like when I was a kid, I played football and I was the quarterback and I was the leader on the field. And that was where I was on flow. And that was where I wanted to take charge and I wanted to be in command. But outside of that, I told you, you know, I was very reserved, very shy. You know, I was very intuitive. I kind of just wanted to read my books and be introverted and kind of be on my own. And the older I've gotten, the more I've realized that the world needs more examples of what a truly warm and empathetic and confident, strong man looks like. And it's not always physically strong. And so, you know, now what I'm like saying is like, if not me, then who? And so, you know, there's a great quote that's surfacing as like, you know, the work that you're avoiding, the work that you don't want to do is your pathway to your greatness. And the work that I always avoid is filming, is creating content, is putting my voice out there. And so I know that while it's scary to me right now, and while it's still imperfect, it's important for me to continue to do that, because doing that work is what's going to allow me to step into that next phase of my life and my career.
I think that's beautiful. That is I really hear your passion, your mission, almost like your purpose as well, of like, this is where I'm heading. This is what I want to do. And that's the thing that drives you. That's the thing that allows you to come out of this comfort zone and be like, no, I know this is going to take me somewhere else. And it really feels like you believe that. Is that how it feels?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you do have to have a conviction in whatever it is that you do. And I think that, you know, one of the key components of being a strong man, of being a better man, is having that conviction, but also being willing to take a stand and stand your ground. Yeah. You know, if you don't have backbone as a man and other people can walk all over you, then you're going to get walked all over, because not everybody is going to have your best interests at heart. Yeah. And for me, you know, my dad was my hero. He was my, you know, basically my everything. And I kind of had the same thing, the good boy syndrome. It's like, you know, everything I did was to make him proud and to make him happy of me. Yeah. And, you know, he ended up losing his job when I was 16. And we actually were, you know, homeless, living in his truck for a while. Mm-hmm. And he had to make the tough decision to, like, let me go and live on my own. And so, you know, at 16, I get taken away from my dad, who's my hero, the strongest guy that I know. And I have to kind of figure it out on my own. And so that left me kind of naive and floundering and trying to figure out the next step. And so, you know, other men kind of preyed upon that, and they tried to, you know, take advantage of my naivety. And so, you know, fortunately I was strong enough to fend off any, you know, attacks from them, but it could have been very bad for me if I wasn't at least physically strong and capable, because of the fact that, you know, there are people out there that don't have everybody's best intentions at heart. And you have to be aware of that, and you have to be able to stand up for yourself and for others.
Yeah. And there's something about that where your heart doesn't have to be guarded. It's not that you have to guard your heart. It's almost like you're watching, you're observing, you've got like a shield around, but you can take that shield off when it feels right. So you're not always shielded. You're not always guarded. Like, I can never share my heart and what's going on for me, but actually, no, you can, but it's realizing where you can and trying to understand the different archetypes that do come in front of you that you feel safe with, that you feel that you can connect with. And it's learning along the way, because like you said, a very, very powerful lesson you learn is that you don't share with everyone, and not everyone has your best interest at heart. And that is very powerful. Not everyone has your best interest at heart. And it's hard. That's a really hard thing to accept sometimes, because the people sometimes that you want to have your best interest, sometimes they're not, they don't. And this is sometimes we trust people with our, like, that they're going to have our best interest, and then we learn that they don't. So it's almost like we can feel hurt, we can feel pain. But that's not saying that we don't allow trust again. It doesn't mean that we have to lock ourselves up again just because we've had that with one person, because that's one person. And next time we can communicate our needs, we can learn to understand, okay, what is it about this person? Or do I feel safe with this person? Or can I say to this person, this is what's going on for me, so they understand where I'm coming from as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a powerful book called The Rational Optimist. And I think that that is one thing that I try to live by and embody. It's like, you know, most people and things in life are inherently good and do have your best interests at heart, but there are always those outliers. And so you have to be mindful of those things, and you have to be diligent, because, you know, those traumas are the ones that really set you back. So having that awareness and having that understanding is what can protect you, but also help you protect others should situations go awry. And again, it's unfortunate that that's a reality of life, but it's kind of like the duality that we said. You know, I don't think that we'll ever be able to completely rid the world of the dark, but the more people that come to the light, the more likely it is that we can kind of overcome those things.
Yeah. And you used the term empathetic man. What's an empathetic man?
I think that, you know, when it comes to empathy, a lot of people kind of fail to get this right. They tend to try to, what is it called? They almost try to like relate to the person. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've experienced that too. And that's not true empathy. That's kind of like you're stealing the limelight when you do that. It's like, oh yeah, I've done that too. And you try to like relate to them. Yeah. But in reality, what you're doing is now you're overpowering them. And so, you know, when it comes to true empathy for me, I think it's allowing that stillness within that moment of that conversation. It's holding that space for them and understanding that, hey, you may not be feeling your best right now. I don't know exactly what you're going through, but I will sit here with you. I will help you work through this. You're not alone in this process. And I think that that's what people need to know, is that they don't have to deal with everything all on their own, and that there is so much strength in being willing to ask for help.
Mm. And we spoke about hyper-independence and asking for help. And I know just like through my own work and through my own experiences is when people are struggling, sometimes they may go and talk to different people. But the people that they're going to, they may feel like they're too much. They may feel like they're being a burden, or that they're causing this other person too much stress. Or the other person's told them, look, you just need to get over it. Or look, just stop thinking about it. Whatever may the other person has said. How or what advice would you give to someone who is going through something really difficult, has gone to a few people and hasn't got the response that perhaps they've needed, and now feel like it's something that's going on for them, like they're the reason or there's something wrong with them? What advice would you give to someone like that?
That's another great question. I think the power of reflection and writing is really helpful there, because you can kind of get it out on your own and you can see it on paper. And, you know, what's beautiful about writing and about journaling is you can go back and you can read those several years later and be like, oh my gosh, like, look at how much I've grown and transformed. Like, I can't believe I even used to think like that, or that I even felt that way. Yeah. Because, you know, what was World War III back then is just another, you know, normal day now, you know, so it's cool to be able to look back on that growth. But the other thing I would say is, you know, understand your audience. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, if you go to, you know, multiple therapists and you're still having an issue, then that might be something that you want to look at. But if you're, you know, going to people who are very self-absorbed, people who don't really know how to give great advice, then of course you're going to get kind of these cookie cutter answers, or, you know, people who are just so busy and caught up in their own lives that they're not going to be able to actually truly provide you that space and provide you that outlet that you need to be able to process those things. So mm-hmm. being strategic in who you go to, and then being willing to be honest and vulnerable, right? If mm-hmm. you're not telling me everything that's going on, I can't help you to the best of my ability because of the fact that I don't know all of the different pieces that are interacting in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear that. And even when you spoke about journaling, I remember when I was younger and I used to journal. That was one of the ways that I used to cope with my own emotions. And I used to write poetry. And I remember I had like about 6-7 journals. I threw them all away. And now I'm like, oh, I should never throw them away. I wish I had them so I could connect with that part of me. So when you said about journaling and you said keep them to be able to see the growth that you have as you're growing up, and as you're healing, it's almost like there's something really powerful with that, because you get to see as like, this is what I used to think, and this is how I used to deal with situations, but this is where I am now. And even when I'm working with clients, sometimes I'll say like, do you remember when you first came in and you used to say X, Y, and Z, and look at you now, you're doing this. And they'll say like, oh, I didn't even realize I do that. And it's because you're with yourself every day. You don't notice these subtle changes, but they're beautiful. And it's a beautiful part of your growth.
Yeah, and that's what a true transformation is. But I love that you used to journal and that you used to write, and especially poetry. I think that, you know, one of my favorite things to do is to do some NSDR, some meditation, and then kind of wake up, or, you know, have that kind of deep universal intelligence, that like universal consciousness moment, to where you can just kind of brain dump. And that's when I like to write in free flow. And sometimes I'll even do some poetry. And it's really incredible what you're able to create and almost like produce in those moments, because you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that I knew that, or that I didn't even know that I was dealing with that. And so it's really powerful to be able to use these practices. And then again, it comes back to being able to have that stillness, that time for reflection and to pause.
Because even now, like if I'm in a really deep emotion, writing really helps me. Like I might be there and I might be crying, I might be happy, I might, whatever emotion it is, like I'll be there, and it's almost like your greatest writing, your greatest work, like, can come from that space when you're in that. Like when I'm really in that space and I'm sitting, and honestly I'll be sitting and I'll be writing, and all this, like, there's so much beauty in that depth as well, because you can feel it, you can understand it, you get it. And it's very creative in how you start to process it and understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, what's happening is you're channeling from source. Yeah. And so that's what's really cool about that is it's like, it's not only just your intelligence that you're able to draw from there in that moment. And so that's when you can really rewire and reprogram your subconscious brain to exhibit these new responses and these new patterns. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny that you were saying the same thing about, you know, when your clients come in, they don't even recognize their own growth. And it's because of the fact that they are with themselves every day. And it's the same thing with, you know, even physical changes. And that's why it's so important to have those progress photos on you so that you can look back and be like, oh my gosh, I have, you know, lost so much weight, but I've also lost all this body composition and I've grown in this way. And so it's really powerful to be able to measure. It's called measuring the gain and the gap. So it's like, mm-hmm. Hey, I may not be where I want to be. I haven't accomplished all my goals in the future yet, but I'm so much farther than I was 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talk about the physical side, and I know that you said that you trained as a PT to start off with. So was that always a goal of yours, or was that something that you found or something that you've ended up in?
Yeah. So I actually, you know, still train clients in person while I'm getting my PhD. But it was kind of like that was what led me down this trajectory that I'm on now is, you know, I stumbled in the gym as a 17-year-old kid who, you know, just wanted to play football and basically, you know, heal some injuries, build some self-confidence and, you know, build some strength. And inevitably what happened was I found a brotherhood and I found a community and I found a place where I felt like I belonged finally. And so, you know, going to the gym became a part of my identity, a part of who I was, but it also allowed me to build this community that I was severely lacking. And so, you know, I feel like society nowadays really lacks in that. And that's why I think that, you know, the gym is one of those places where it's one of those cultures where people like get obsessed with it because of the fact that they're like, oh my gosh, this is the first time I've ever feel like I belonged in life. And so, you know, with the lack of religion and that kind of thing in our society, people have found these other communities to actually feel like they fit in. But ultimately for me, you know, when I graduated with my master's in business, I was training some clients to help kind of pay through that. And I was like, you know what, this is what I love doing. I want to help people. And so I started my own training business. And then, you know, kind of when I was telling you about the self-development kind of, you know, COVID breakup, that's when I started to really dive back into psychology. And my ex had actually introduced me to Stoicism. And I attribute, you know, a lot of my growth to the philosophy of Stoicism and, you know, really just controlling what you can control. And then develop this like anti-fragile mentality to where it's like, hey, you know, the bad things that happen in your life, you can either allow those to become PTSD where it's traumatizing to you, or you can use those moments as post-traumatic growth. And you can actually change the way that you view those as a, hey, this is going to give me the opportunity to learn how to create more emotional self-regulation, to create more mental self-regulation. And once you can like differentiate between those two, that's when the growth really starts to happen. It's like, okay, hey, I'm just going to change the way that I view this. It's my perspective that causes me to either grow or to shrink from this experience. And so inevitably, you know, going to the gym was the catalyst that started me down this kind of growth mindset and physical growth. But what really happened was going internally allowed me to grow from the inside out. And what I realized is that, you know, the people that are just in the gym are only building their egos. And so once you add in the psychology component, once you add in the mindset component, that's when you can start to really develop individually, holistically from the inside out, but also to just become a better person and to recognize that the world doesn't revolve around you.
Yeah. And it is. It sounds like you are very holistic in your approach. It sounds like you have sort of like connected with so many different parts, but the way that you work is very holistic. You understand the mind, body, energy side. And that's how you show up now. Like you're not just about, okay, I need to present in a certain way. I need to do this. I need to do this. There's very much like it's all different layers. The depth is there. Is that how you see yourself?
Yeah. So there's something kind of called your life force. And if you were to look at it as like a triangle, like 80% of the life force comes from your physical health. It's from your nutrition. It's from your fitness. It's from your sleep and recovery. And so, you know, what I like to think of is it's 33% of each of those, but 100% of all of it. And so if you're lacking in one of those departments, then you're going to feel the effects of that. And so, you know, the one thing that I wish people understood about working out or fitness or just being active in general general is it's so much more for your mental health than it is for your physical health, for the way that you look. And so, you know, I think that a lot of people fail to realize that, like, if they just move their body more, then they would probably feel a lot better also. And then you get the results and you start to feel better about yourself because you also start to look better. And then, you know, you get to the second layer of the triangle, and that's going to be like your relationships to other people, your relationships with yourself. And so you really start to understand, okay, hey, like, I need to work on my character, who I am as a person, my emotional intelligence, and how can I relate to other people better? And then your final piece of the pillar is self-actualization. And I think that the way you truly tap into that is by prayer, is by meditation, is by reflection, is by journaling and writing. And once you can get that full triangle, that's when you're going to maximize 100% of your life force, and you're going to feel a lot better about who you are as a person and how you show up in the world.
Do you feel like you maximize your full triangle?
It's a daily battle, right? So, you know, I don't think that we ever fully maximize those things. I think that that's what makes it fun. And so, you know, once you learn more about like neurochemistry and all the physiological responses, you know, the reason that we love to work out so much is because when you're weightlifting, you're getting an endorphin release. And when you're running, you're getting a serotonin boost. And when you accomplish a task, you're getting a dopamine release. And when you're doing it with somebody else, you get oxytocin. So it's like, of course you're going to feel great because all of your happiness chemicals are just flooding and going through the roof. And so that's why people become obsessed with it, because they're like, oh my gosh, like, I feel good afterwards. Well, it's like, no shit, you feel good because you're getting a flood of all of these happiness chemicals. And so, you know, for me, the life force is something that you constantly are going to have to continue to work on. You're never really done, but that's what makes it so much. That's what makes it fun. That's what makes it worthwhile. It's like you've embodied this identity of like, hey, this is what I do. And it makes me like, I don't feel like myself unless I work out. And so that's what makes it fun for me, is like showing up every day. And it really is like enjoying the process.
Yeah. And do you come across people that are just focused on the physical side? And if so, how would you approach that? Like, how would you work with someone who's just focused on this one sort of like part of their life force, which is just the physical side?
Yeah, that's a great question. And then that happens all the time, you know, and that tends to be attributed to the arrival fallacy. And so, you know, what people think is like, hey, when I get the six pack, I'm going to be happy. Yeah. When I get the girl, I'm going to be happy. When I get the job, I'm going to be happy. But in reality, it's like, if you're not happy where you are, you're never going to be happy when you get the six pack. And so once you've gotten the six pack, it's going to be something else that you're going to change to, like, oh, okay, now I need to compete and win a bodybuilding show. And it's like, no, you need to be happy right now in order to be happy when you get to that place that is off in the near future. And so, you know, inevitably though, it's really difficult to work on all of these things at the same time. I do like to layer them. And so, you know, if somebody comes to me and they say, hey, I want to get a six pack, what I do is I kind of sell them what they want and I give them what they need. Mm-hmm. And so while I'm helping them get their six pack, I'm also starting to have those conversations with them about building their mindset, about working on becoming a better person and building their character, on, you know, learning the tools to be able to work through their emotions and to understand that, hey, while it's great to have that physical body, while it's great to have the six pack, it's not everything. And it's only going to last you a certain amount of time. So you really need to start to focus on the things that make you whole as a person, not just the external.
And that, like, when you talk about that, it's like, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And that's what comes up for me, because sometimes even with clients or even with family members or with friends, they're repeating the same things and you can see it. And you're just like, right, this is what's going on. Like, it's up to you what you want to do with it. And they'll look at you and be like, no, they're just in denial about it because they're not ready to change it. And they might come back and knock on the door again and be like, hey, this is what's going on. And we're having the same conversation. So if that's to happen, or if someone's going through that, like, what do you think that's about? Why do you feel like people don't change in situations like that?
I think that that comes back to kind of our very first conversation, right? I think Harvard just did a study that 96% of people believe that they are self-aware, like self-reported wrote that they think they're self-aware. In reality, only about 15% of people are self-aware. And so it's
that's
kind of that
big
same
difference, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's a
massive,
huge
right?
difference.
So 85% are not actually self-aware. And I believe that, right? People are just kind of waking up and going through the motions. Yeah. And I used to be one of those people. And so, you know, the goal is to get people to kind of wake up to understand that, like, hey, you know, you don't have to accept the cards that life dealt you. And so you don't have to wake up and just keep going through the motions. You can actually craft and create the life that you want to live, that you're excited to wake up to every day. You know, my definition of success now is just to simply enjoy the passage of time. It's like you have to be able to find joy in those nothing moments. Otherwise, what's the point? So ultimately, though, when it comes to those people, you can never underestimate the power of planting a seed. So it's like, hey, they may not get it yet, but maybe 3 years down the road, they kind of get that wake up call and they're like, oh, my gosh, I remember what he said that, you know, that one time, and it starts to sink in and to resonate. And then it starts to plant and the roots start to grow deeper and they finally start to wake up and have their own self awareness awakening.
Sometimes I think we need to be ready. We need to be ready to face whatever it is that we feel we're avoiding. But when we think of like self-awareness, that's a really interesting study, by the way. I'm going to have to look up that as soon as we finish here. But when we think of like self-awareness, like what does self-awareness mean to you?
It's having an understanding and awareness of our weaknesses and of our strengths and of our limitations, of our patterns. And once you can truly have that awareness, an awareness of your existence, right? So I think that once you can have that awareness is when you could start to take that next step of self-realization and self-actualization. Mm-hmm. And for me, it does come through journaling and writing. And it's like, okay, hey, you know, if I am the creator of my own future, then I need to have an idea of what that future looks like. I need to have a vision of where I'm trying to go. And if you just kind of are, you know, if you're trying to go to the moon, you need to start to acquire the pieces to get a rocket ship. And other people just like they're trying to go to the moon, but they're like sitting there trying to assemble a boat, you know. And it's like you're never going to get there if you aren't intentional about the way that you're trying to move through your life. And, you know, nobody else is going to like create your life for you. So you have to be the one who decides what you want to write and be the creator of your own life.
Yeah. And it's beautiful, isn't it? Because when you even just think of your life, yes, you've always been this sort of introverted person and you spoke about like understand or wanting to read books, but being different to everyone else around you and hiding maybe that part of you and then trying to like be part of this, be the leader on the pitch and then thinking actually, but I'm really introvert or I'm quite shy, but then trying to show up being like, I need to be like this. It's everything that I write about in my book, which is the High Functioning Anxiety book, which is we present in one way of being this, like, I need to be this, because we want this sense of belonging, which we've touched on today. And also there's this other side where we feel like, oh, I don't want to be this side. I feel ashamed or I feel like no one's going to accept that part. So we don't allow this part to connect with other people. So we're trying to like develop relationships from this one part of us, but there's this other part. So when we want deep, meaningful relationships, how can we possibly try and get these deep, meaningful relationships if we're not showing both our parts or our authentic self? We're just showing parts of ourselves. And do we even know the parts that we've hidden away? Or is that also, we're not aware of it. So how can we have deep, meaningful relationships or connect with people or be vulnerable with people if we're not being authentic and we're not looking at other parts of us that are so powerful, so beautiful, but we have learned they're not good enough. They're not worthy enough. And we've made that choice. And because of that, we're now not able to have these deep, meaningful relationships. And we are on this like, go, 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 next thing, next thing, next thing, because we want to keep ourselves busy. We don't want people to know what this other part is all about.
Yeah. I mean, that was awesome. I actually really love the way that you articulated that. I think that that's super interesting and something that is definitely should be thought about.
Yeah.
For me, it's, I knew where I was going to go with this and I forgot.
It's all right. This is part of being human, right?
Right. Ultimately, what it comes down to, though, is recognizing that, like, if you have the humility to know that you know very little, then you're going to continue to be able to grow and you're going to be able to go into situations like curiously and open-minded. And even with that curiosity with yourself. And so sometimes just sitting there and taking that moment to pause and to reflect and be like, hey, why am I feeling this way? And that's what can allow those patterns to come back and for you to realize like, oh, okay, hey, I'm doing this because this happened in the past. Well, that's not going to happen again because, you know, I'm an adult now and I can actually handle myself and I don't have to worry about that happening anymore. But then truly knowing what you want, because if you know what you want, you can start to create those standards and those expectations and those boundaries for yourself. And then that'll allow you to then put that out into the universe. And that's what, you know, embodying authenticity means. It's being able to be your authentic self, regardless of the situation, and to show up as yourself without having to have a filter on. And, you know, inevitably we do grow out of necessity. You know, I was just on one of my other friends' podcasts and he was saying that his journey to authenticity was very difficult because it didn't come naturally to him. Yeah. He kind of was just like, I don't really want to be a good person. Like there's no need for that. And inevitably he got older and he's like, shit, I need other people in order to be able to build the life that I want. So I need to start working on myself and better myself. And for him to be that honest and that transparent about the fact that like he grew out of necessity, not because of the fact that he felt like that was his natural calling, was really cool for me to hear that, like, you know, I didn't realize that not everybody like genuinely wants to grow for the better. And sometimes people have to do that, even though it's not necessarily their natural intuition.
Yeah. Isn't it beautiful how everyone's journey is so different, but we all are looking for the same thing, which is meaningful relationships. We're all looking for that that feeling of being enough, that contentment. And each of us are so different, but we all are striving to try and be the same because we don't want to be seen as being different or feeling like we're not, or we don't have the sense of belonging with others. And there's that fear of rejection, fear of abandonment that comes up. So we're all like running around trying to fit in and trying to make life better. But actually all the work starts from within us rather than everything that's going on externally for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that everything, it begins within. And once you can truly go within, that's when the external begins to open up to you. Because, you know, that's kind of the law of attraction, right? It's like once you're attuned with what it is that you're trying to, what you're seeking out in the universe, then those opportunities seem to fall into your lap. And it's like, you know, the great quote is luck is when preparation meets opportunity. It's like when you've done all the preparation, when you are authentically operating in your zone of genius, then those opportunities are going to start seeking you out because of the fact that you are know what you want and you're attuned to that frequency. So you're able to tap into the psychology or, you know, the law of cause and effect of the universe.
Yeah. And I see that. And even through my own experiences, like when I used to be a massive people pleaser, the people that I had around me, they were all people that I was caring for, I was looking out for. And I wasn't really seen in that because I didn't want to be seen. So subconsciously, I created a space and created relationships where people wouldn't really see me, but I would be needed. So to be needed, it meant that it was me constantly giving out. Until you start then doing your inner work, you start vibing in a different space and you start realizing, hang on, I also want to be seen. I also want this. And these are what my needs are. And it's only when you start going through that process and you start understanding more, you're able then, like we said, vibrationally, you start connecting with those people and they start coming to you, and the other relationships you can transition, you can change, or some you may need to also let go of. And that's the beauty of life. Like with there's something I was reading the other day, and it's with acceptance and with self-love, you also have grief. You also have this space of you have to grieve like the life and the people that once were, because as you're growing and as you're healing, you enter a space where it's a space that you want to be in, but there's also this letting go of this space of what once was. And that's like the duality, as we're full circle back into this duality.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a powerful thing that you said is allowing yourself to grieve that, right? Knowing that what's meant to be for you for now is maybe just a chapter of your life. And what's on the other side is something that's probably even more fulfilling and even more deep and profound. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's like, you know, people will act out of self-interest. And so if they're getting something from you, you know, being the people pleaser, then they're going to continue to take advantage of that situation because they're benefiting from that, right? And so for you to be able to have that courage and to be able to work your way and get through that, to recognize that, the best thing you could do was to be able to move away from those types of people, because the lesson that they needed to learn was that they need to be self-reliant, that they need to be able to handle themselves, that they shouldn't necessarily allow somebody else to enable them to be, you know, selfish or to be lazy or to be whatever it is that they were trying to do by taking advantage of the situation.
Yeah. And sometimes we hold on because we're like, oh no, how are they going to cope without us? But also we're not really enabling them to live their best life because we're holding on to parts of them that maybe they need to learn to do. And just thinking of like your healing journey, what do you feel has been the greatest thing that you've learned on your healing? And when I say healing, I mean, post-COVID, what do you think is one of the biggest lessons that you've learned?
That's a great question. I think, you know, for me, ultimately, it really does come down to that butterfly effect. Recognizing that, you know, every action that we take or every inaction, the things that we don't do, have an effect on the universe and have an effect on the people and the things around us. And so, you know, I want to make sure that the things that I interact with, the things that I choose to do, have a positive impact on the world around me. And so, you know, understanding that, you know, me taking my best interest into everything is what's going to be helpful, not only for me, but also for my environment around me.
Yeah. And that little boy who's within you, what words of advice would you give to him when you think back to him wanting to read his book and perhaps trying to hide away from that? Like what piece of advice would you want to give?
That's another great question. You know, the funny thing is everything makes sense in reverse. You know, it's like you start to look back on the breakups. You're like, oh, that's why that needed to happen. You look back on, you know, you lose a job or, you know, an opportunity didn't work out for you. It's like, you know, it redirected you into the direction that you were supposed to be going. And so for me as a kid, you know, having those moments of being shy, of being introverted, of being bullied, of being made fun of, they were moments that taught me like, hey, this is the direction that you need to go. And so it was the sad reality of the situation is, you know, I'm grateful for those moments. I'm grateful for those experiences because they allowed me to get to be to where I am today. If I wasn't bullied, I wouldn't have probably worked out and I wouldn't have tried to grow stronger and I wouldn't be able to now take care of myself and to protect others. And so, you know, it's really cool to be able to look back and realize like, oh, all of those things were happening for me. They weren't happening to me. And so, you know, as a kid, I would say, hey, you know, continue to do these things that make you happy and that you love to do, because they're going to make you that's what's going to make you special and unique as you get older.
I think that's really beautiful. I actually think that that's a really beautiful response. And I say that and I'm smiling because someone asked me a very similar question once. And I was like, but I don't really want to say anything like to her because she had to go through what she had to get through, because otherwise I wouldn't be where I am now. And the person looked at me and was like, but don't you want to say anything? I was like, yeah, like I'm really proud of you. And like, it's not that I don't have that relationship, but I'm like, no, but we're going to get through this and it's going to make us who we are today. So there is something beautiful. So when you were talking just then and you were thinking of, yeah, we live life moving forwards, but we don't understand it until we start connecting the dots back. And as we start doing that, things start to make sense. And it's like, ah, that's why, and that's why, and that's why. So yeah, you wouldn't want to change anything. And when I look back at my life, I'm like, yeah, there's things I don't want to change because I know I wouldn't be in this mindset. I wouldn't be wanting to do the things that I'm doing right now because I wouldn't, again, appreciate this light space that I'm in compared to the darkness that I've been and I've touched in. So everything has its purpose and everything has its plan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the thing about the universe is you never know what's going to happen. But that's also what makes it fun and unique. If we knew, then it probably wouldn't be as interesting or as mysterious.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just to say, I like, thank you for coming here today and on Therapize and just sharing your views, not just about like your journey and things that you've been through as a child, but also understanding, okay, what mental health is and the different parts of mental health. It's not just about physical health. There is your emotional well-being. There is the vulnerability. There's authenticity. All of these different words that we sort of like throw around, but actually going into the meaning of what they mean. So I really appreciate you coming here today and sharing that. I feel like time's just flown by.
It really has. And I appreciate you having me on the show. And I know that this is going to be something that's going to benefit not only, you know, myself, but for everybody to be able to have access to these tools and these resources. And, you know, oftentimes they do sound like they're very like out there. But I promise if people just would sit there and they would take that time to reflect and to be still, then they too could also embody these things and start to realize that there's a whole different world outside of the current one that they're living in.
And also for you to take away as well, like you're really good at being able to articulate, being able to just speak out like the different parts of psychology, the different parts of like mental health, like you're very, very good. So I hope that we'll see more of you and more videos of you sharing your wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate that. And, you know, this is a part of that journey. And I appreciate you having me on the show. And I think that, you know, the more people that do this, the more society will benefit. You know, I think the betterment of one person is the betterment of mankind. But realistically, it's like, you know, I say this all the time, like other, you know, therapists and other trainers and all these people aren't my competition. Like we're not competing against one another. There's the universe is abundant. We're allies on the same team. Our competition is, you know, social media and it's television and it's fast food and it's all these big corporations that are pushing all of these agendas on us that are trying to keep us at these lower frequencies. And so, you know, it's cool to be able to have conversations with other people who are out on the front lines, who are really trying to help people not only wake up, but to better themselves and to realize that they are the creators of their own future.
I love that. I really, really do. Because sometimes I think like with therapists or with coaches, there's that people will say like, there's so many of you. And it's like, yeah, but we're all doing something different where there's so many people out there that need support. And one person, one therapist may not work for one person and another therapist may. And that's okay. But we're all here holding the light up and being making the world a better place by just doing what we can to try and talk through things and understand things. But to do all of that, it's also working on ourselves. And like you said, it's not about ego and, oh, look at this person or look at that person and what's this and what's this. And if that is coming up for you, that is about sitting with that and understanding, right, if that's coming up here, where else is that coming up? And what does this mean? And what's going on here for me? Really sitting in the trenches and understanding that.
Yeah, absolutely. That just asking yourself those questions can be super powerful, and being curious and being empathetic and compassionate with yourself. I think that, you know, it's that cliche of like treat yourself like you would treat your best friend. And it's so true. It once you can take yourself out of your own situation, your self-talk becomes so much more positive. Your self-image becomes so much more positive. Your self-esteem starts to shoot through the roof. And then it's like, okay, hey, now all of a sudden you're showing up in the world as a different person because of the fact that you truly view yourself as a better person.
No, definitely. Everything you've said, I agree with. And before we end, there's one question that we ask everyone right at the end of the podcast. That is, do you feel life is fair?
Do I feel life is fair?
Everyone's reactions are really interesting. Every time I ask, they're like, I thought we were at the end. Like, what do we need a whole episode for this?
No, that's great. That's a great question. In all honesty, I don't believe that life is fair. Mm. However, just because life isn't fair doesn't mean that it's not our responsibility to do something about it. So, you know, there's certain things that happen to us in life, you know, and it may not be our fault that it's happened, but it is our responsibility to take action to change that. And so, you know, I think that the world is not fair right now because of the fact that we have created that, and we as a collective. And so we as a collective need to do something about that in order to make it a more fair, a more just, a more moral place. And I think that, you know, one of the ways that we do that is by, you know, changing the way that we view success in the world. Yeah. You know, it's so much less about financial and success from a wealth perspective, and so much more about success from a character building perspective. Hey, am I a good person? It's, you know, it's all the eulogy values. Like, what do people say about me at my funeral? How did I make them feel? What are the stories? What are the memories that we have together? Not the, hey, he drove a Ferrari and, you know, he, you know, had this multi-billion-dollar business. Like, people, we need to stop putting less emphasis and value on those things. And we need to start caring more about how we treat one another and the spiraling effect that we have on one another.
Yeah, we're really missing that, aren't we? Like, community building. It's like we're so focused on the external world and what we think that we should be in the external world. And there's something about the collective, and there's something about like community and just having each other's back and all of us working together, rather than it being, no, I'm more individualized and I'm going to do this for me and I'm going to show up driving this or owning this or wearing this. And it's like, you know what? There's so much more to people than there's so much more to human beings and just what we do and what we wear and what we drive. There's so much more.
Yeah, you know, I think you know, again, we could talk about this stuff all day, but, you know, the last thing I'd probably like to say is that I think that technology is one of the things that's really harming us in this way. You know, obviously, you and I are able to have this very intimate, close, you know, conversation from across the world, which is fantastic. Yeah. This is the way that it should be utilized. This is the way that needs to be utilized. But in reality, what happens is we're all walking around like zombies on our phones and we're not interacting with the people around us. And so, you know, what I've noticed is that individuals as a whole are great. You talk to somebody, even if you have different political beliefs, different values, you can still connect and you can still have a great conversation, and it has a positive effect on both of you. But as soon as people group up and as soon as they get into factions, that's when they become hateful and resentful, and they seem to like judge people for not being a part of their in group. And so I think that that's where we kind of do ourselves a disservice, is by becoming parts of these groups that hate other groups. And it's like, no, we need to all strive to get a little bit, find the middle ground. And we need to find that commonality, understand the big picture that we're all trying to coexist on the same planet. And that if we were truly like intentional about it, we could create a place where everybody felt as if they had the right to do whatever it is they want to do, as long as they're not harming other people.
Yeah. And that all comes back down to what you said earlier about taking responsibility. So if you know that there's something going on within you, it's like, right, what is this about? Let me take this responsibility to try and understand and to try and make sense of this, rather than it coming out through anger or through frustration and trying to get back at someone because they made you feel a certain way. It's like, hang on, what is this that's going on for me that I am feeling? It's taking that ownership, going inside, making sense of it, to then be able to respond in a way that you know is more compassionate. And it's not compassionate where you end up, again, heart on hand, and it's like you being really vulnerable and letting people take advantage. It's not saying that. It's doing it in a way that's fair, but you're being assertive. You're sharing what's going on for you and not afraid of what the other person might think, because you're sharing a viewpoint of what's going on for you.
Yeah, well, that's why it's so important for us to tell the truth and to be honest, because if you tell the truth, then you don't get something that you don't want. So, and, you know, especially, you know, when people start lying about things, that's when it becomes really problematic, because now you have to remember that lie. So it's like, you might as well just be authentic, speak your truth, and the people that are going to resonate with you, the people that are meant to stay in your lives will, because of the fact that you are operating your authentic self.
Yeah, no. Definitely. And that's a beautiful way to end. So thank you again for being here. And I know people are going to take what they need from this. So I appreciate you sharing your wisdom.
Absolutely. No, thank you, Dr. Lita, for having me. And I look forward to continuing to see your work and the impact that it has.
Likewise, I continue seeing your new videos that you're going to be posting.
Thank you so much. This is inspiring to continue to do the work. So I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you and your wisdom. Thank you. Hey there. Are you ready to take your personal growth journey to the next level? I'm really excited to announce that my new online course is finally here. And in this course, we deep dive into topics we explore on this podcast, but with even more in-depth lessons, practical exercises, and personalized guidance. Don't miss out on this opportunity to invest in yourself and unlock your full potential. Enroll now and join me on this life-changing journey.